Hello, you're listening to Crossing the Desert. This podcast is a reality series about how I build my small business in the Emirates. I'm Isaac. In each episode, I share how my own business is going, but most importantly, I learn from other entrepreneurs who came to Dubai from India, Egypt, Palestine, Caribbean Islands, UK, Russia, I mean, from all over the world. Stories of their success and challenges will help me on my own way. The podcast is brought to you by Fortis, the omnichannel platform that integrates POS, CRM, orders, payments, and loyalty programs for small and medium-sized businesses. Today, I'm going to talk to an entrepreneur who helped her sister turn her talent for creating beautiful interiors into a business. Meet Hamdan Abbar.
I'm Hamdan Abbar. I'm one of the co-founders of our company called Dress My Room, which is an interior design studio. My partner is actually my eldest sister. So it's an interesting dynamic. I'm the youngest in the family. So the two of us basically joined forces and started off this company.
She was born in Dubai and she began her career in the corporate sector with Jumeirah Group, which I don't know if you're familiar with. It's all the hotels in the UAE and international, for example, like Virgin Arab and all that. So she used to do the marketing in that company. That was, in fact, her first job. And you know how it is with this first kind of jobs.
It was my first job. I was young and thought if I'm working late, not that I chose to sit down to impress them, but I was really working late. And he wasn't so happy with receiving emails after working hours and told me it means you're not being efficient during your working hours. So I thought I would be praised. And instead, he wasn't happy. And he said, you need to learn how to manage your time within those hours. So what I used to do was secretly work in the evening, save all my email drafts so I'm on time, and then send it all out in the morning. So it's as simple as that, but it taught me discipline. I can tell you that for sure.
Love that.
And my mindset with our team now changed as well, that we need to learn how to balance switching off, using our time correctly and efficiently.
The same manager who taught her how to find work-life balance gave her understanding of how to work.
And I still go back to him every once in a while and thank him on everything he's done. All the discipline, decision-making. I can give you the simplest example. Part of my job was doing all those marketing emails that you get from companies. So I was junior, just started. He gave me that task to select the image that would go in the email. So I just chose a pretty image of one of the hotels and went to him with that. And he asked me why. I said, it's a nice picture. And he said, that's not how we choose the picture. You need to go back, sit with the revenue team, sit with several departments, do your study on your audience, find out how they spend their time in their hotels, what they do, and you give them that picture to get their attention. It's something very simple, but it changed my mindset in all decision-making, not just selecting images, that everything needs to be studied. You need to put enough time into research, understanding your audience. It was a simple, simple task that taught me so much.
And it is this ability to respond to real client needs that a few years later would help Hamdan find a unique business model that no other interior design agency has. The model that is so successful that they have patented its name. And I think that you can try this model on any other service business. I mean, landscaping, design, marketing, SMM. But let me tell you everything in order. So the time has come, and at some point, Hamdan decided to leave the Jumeirah Group and moved on. And
when I moved at the end to a government entity, it was very, very, very different from what I came from. I tried to adapt, but it wasn't that I couldn't deliver. I just wasn't happy, maybe. It's just not matching what I want to do. And then I realized I come home, and even when I'm home, I'm just not in the mood to see anyone, to do anything. I was just drained by the end of the day. And when it really started affecting, I would say, my mood and lifestyle, I reached a point where I said, I really, really cannot do this. And one day I decided that it's time for me to leave corporate. with no plan on what's next, to be honest. I'm usually a planner, major planner, and you'll see that because I run all the operations in the company. And to just leave a job with no plan was a difficult choice. I was paid much higher. I had a much higher position. Everyone was surprised that I'm letting go. I had a serious conversation with my husband to see what's next for me if I leave this job. We had to do changes our life for me to leave that job without that security. And he supported me in that decision. We did have to do changes like moving out of the space we were in. I sacrificed a lot to leave that job and do what I'm doing now.
Well, as you may have already guessed, this is not the end of the story, but it's the beginning.
So in this time between jobs where I was trying to look into my next step, I had a casual conversation with my sister Hind, who's the second co-founder in the company, and she had stopped doing what she used to do. She tried to start this company on her own, but she's the designer. And of course, you know, the creative mind is very difficult for them to do that and also run a business. I think we can all agree on that. It comes with different skill sets. So basically, she completely stopped at that point. And I noticed that she's doing projects for family, but not under the company anymore. And I just saw it as a waste of talent and skill. I just kept telling her, with what you can do, there's so much more. She was designing rooms, sorry, for my aunt's house that looked like a 5-star hotel. And I'm like, why are you doing this just for fun? This could turn into a very successful company. And I literally asked her, what do you not like doing? What made you stop? And I'll make sure I take care of that. So you can have the passion of being creative and designing back without those set of challenges that would stop you from doing it. And all of it was just operations or admin or management of the company, but none of it was the skill that she had. That's not the challenges she was facing. And I said, this is what I enjoy doing, and I have the background to do it. I literally created a PowerPoint presentation with a proposal to show her what I could offer and what we could do. And to be honest, our industry or our company didn't require a big capital investment. So we did have the choice to just try it out and see how it goes without a big risk. I think she wasn't expecting it. She just kept trying, of course, to mention all the challenges. So I said, you know, there's no harm. I'm not working yet. Let's try it out and see how it goes. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, you can continue not doing this. But I was very, very confident with the skill sets and talent that she had that we can do something with that. And that was purely the reason why I approached her. The first thing I came and told her what's happening there is, you know, creative people don't think business. And I'm saying, okay, where are you making money? And how are you charging? How are you calculating all of this? And I realized she's barely making any money because she's so fixated on the final result that she wasn't charging for her time or her effort. Like the deals the people got before I came in were, they were lucky. That's all I could tell you, because I noticed she wasn't even charging for her time or skill. And that's the first thing that I raised as a major flag. If you're going to run a business, yes, you enjoy doing it, but you also need to be fair to yourself, to your skills, to your time. And we had to set a formula and look into different ways of how are we going to charge and what's fair and do our market research. So there was a lot to go through because, yes, she did it, but she did it very casually. Maybe I'm not sure if that would be the term, but it wasn't something that she was taking it project by project. Even the branding was not there. We literally started from scratch. So I said, all right, we need to get the brand right, a new logo, all your touch points, quotations, invoices, just the basics. And I said, this is what I can bring to the table. We need to create our services and have a flow chart of how a project will be managed from A to Z. And those were the things I highlighted initially. And I think it gave her the comfort that she's in good hands.
Hamdan explained to me how she created this formula.
It took a lot of trial and error, to be honest. So I'm very systematic. So first thing, I looked into actual costs. For example, if I'm paying any technicians, if I'm paying someone to create any documents for us, I put in the actual costs and then sat with her and tried to find out what she thinks is fair for her hour, as you said, to charge by hour, then benchmarked it to the market. And then after that, reached an actual formula on Excel where I can plug in how many renders, for example, of drawings are needed by her side, and it calculates the hour per drawing versus her time and gives me the final amount. So we're fair when we're also quoting clients, because one thing you don't want is quoting Isaac a price and then Alexandra comes in with something very similar, but she's overcharged, which could happen if you don't have a formula. So we sat down and did a formula, tried it. And then, of course, over time, we became more experienced, knew what to expect, such as revisions and different rounds and all that, and started building on that till we reached a point where we have a very easy way to quote clients now.
But figuring out the pricing was just the beginning. Hamdan also needed to attract customers. So she started with social media.
So one of the things that I proposed in that presentation when we first started is the Instagram page. She barely had anything on it. She never took pictures of finished projects. And she is my eldest sister, with all due respect, but the age gap with social media makes a difference. So she's not very active on social media and doesn't realize maybe how powerful it is. Naturally, on her personal accounts, she's that person who rarely posts. So she did the same to her business and didn't give the account the attention. And I said, the first thing I need to do is go back to any project that you finished and hired a professional photographer, did some decent photography, and just gave a new look for the Instagram page immediately. So from the first week I started with her, I was on photo shoots from one side to the other, trying to capture whatever she already did to showcase her work. And since then, I've never did any paid advertisement on our Instagram account till today. Not even one boost. And all of our clients come through Instagram.
Like, this is literally a dream.
It took a lot of work and planning, I would say. I have apps that pre-plan my grid to see how the images would look, how it would flow, the color scheme. I even have strategies. Okay, I just show the living room. I need to show a bedroom and then something for kids to capture different audiences. So yes, it looks like I'm just posting, but there's a lot of thought behind every single post I do. I think as of today, it's around 16,000 or 17,000 followers. But I can see who the followers are. They are all based here locally, and most of them are actual potential clients. We're a small city. I recognize the names. I recognize the profiles. I know who they are. And the followers are, I would say, quality followers. And I think that happened because it was a natural growth and there was no paid advertisement. And since then, I would say most of our inquiries are through Instagram. If not, it's through word of mouth. Those are the only two channels that people are coming through to our company. And I ask every single person, almost every single person, how did you hear about us? It's Instagram or X client told me to contact you.
When I went to dress my room Instagram, honestly, I was impressed. I mean, in each interior, I see a recognizable design style. And at the same time, I see the character of the people who live there. This one loves racing cars. This family likes big family gatherings. And this person clearly wanted to create a quiet space in the middle of a noisy city. And I was also very impressed by the project called 1971, in honor of the founding date of the Emirates. And you know me, I love history. This design project features mother of pearl shells and date palms, and cozy canopies over the beds that look like desert tents. And I think I can figure out why. I think it's because Sheikh Zayed, who is the founder and first president of the UAE, decided to honor Arab tradition the night before signing the agreement on the unification of the Emirates. So he spent the evening in the desert on the way from Abu Dhabi to Dubai, first at a camp in Al Samih, and then an open desert. Sounds amazing, right? But okay, let's get back to business. Calculating the financial model, pricing, and marketing, this is what I would start such a business with. But I promised you something unusual, right? And This is the story of how Hamda and her sister found a new product or a new positioning that was not yet on the market.
When we started in 2018, we were like any other interior designer in town. We offer interior designer services where clients would say, all right, I want to renovate this space. And the way designs are submitted usually in this industry is by renders and visuals and technical drawings. So they would come to us and we would quote them for their design fees, do the designs. And then once that's done, based on the approved design, we then tell them how much it will cost them to implement that design and bring it to life. And that's where we notice the gap. What we call it internally is the dreaming phase. Clients can dream about the design and visuals and ask for a lot. But once it comes to actually bringing it to life, it doesn't necessarily match the budgets you've allocated for that project. And then designing based on a budget always disappoints clients because they think this is the best design you can give them. When that's not what really we're suggesting, we're saying this is what you can afford. And that's where the challenge happens. So what we decided to do is we will not design based on a budget because a client is paying for design and they should see the best case scenario. When the execution comes, if that budget doesn't suit them, then we can simplify the design, but at least they manage to see what could have been rather than being disappointed in the design submitted. So even if they say this is their budget, I say this is your right. You are paying for the design. So we want to show you what the space could be. And then it's your choice once to see the quotation to decide what you're willing to let go of versus what you want to keep in the space. And this way, there's no disappointments and they can just see the reality of costs and make the decision on their own. So that's what we did for 2 years, which is your typical interior design services.
At this stage already, the business model looks inventive to me. Instead of budget-based design, the sister create dream-based design. And in my opinion, this way they solve many problems at once. So first, this way they show the full range of their capabilities to make client want to work with them to show their expertise. Second, they make an honest upsell. I'm sure that after seeing the house of their dreams with their own eyes, it is much more difficult for a client to refuse additional design elements, even if the initial budget did not include them. And third, they increase retention and lifetime value. The client stops at the level that they can afford, but they know that this space has greater potential and it can be developed, and in a year or two, they will return with a new budget. But the search for the right business model did not stop there.
But a lot of requests came in that were simpler and don't really require those renders and drawings. It could be just a paint job and new furniture, and to pay that much for renders didn't make sense because that amount could go straight into the furniture. So that's when I would say our company's turning point happened, and it was during COVID. It was 2020 in summer. In the UAE, we were all on lockdown. We had to get permission to go to grocery shopping. I mean, it was proper lockdown back then. And once they reduced the restrictions where we can still move around, but everyone was pretty much scared of COVID at that point, we thought no one would want, you know, workers and a big team to be in their house renovating. So we need to find a way where we can get in and out very quickly so we can still continue what we're doing. And we decided to run a summer campaign. Because here in the UAE in summer, a big majority of the people travel. And in that year, there was travel restrictions. So we said, all right, people will sit home. They're not spending money on vacations. They can see the flaws in their houses that they want to fix. So let's try to offer them something that can be done. And trust me, everyone noticed their house during lockdown and everyone wanted to fix their house because that's where they were. We came up with this idea called the Summer Fix. So we were running it for a very limited time. We said there's only 6 slots that we're taking. First come, first serve. You don't pay for renders. You don't pay for drawings. We tell you exactly what can be done within your budget and get it done immediately by mood boards only. And people were applying. Like, it was way more than what we expected. I had the first 6 slots booked maybe in the first 2 hours, and we were really shocked. We weren't expecting that, to be honest. Most of them were clients who approached us before but our service was, I wouldn't say too advanced, but it's more than what they needed. When they first approached us and we said, we only do it with renders, and they say, but I just want a paint job and change the furniture. And we say, we're sorry, we need to go through the drawings. Those clients, as soon as they saw that post, are the ones who came back.
I think sometimes we try too hard. Sometimes I try so hard to bring the best results to my clients that I can just forget that they actually have a lot of other things to do. And sometimes all they want from me is not this full-scale English course, you know, from zero to fluent, but just a casual solution, just here and now. So I discussed this with JP Serhal, marketing director from Fortis, and this is what he said.
So whenever you sign a contract with Fortis, the very first step is to collect that product catalog in order to upload it onto the Fortis, what we call merchant account. The merchant account is where merchant or business is able to manage their entire business. It's where they have their product catalog. It's where they have their customer database. It's where they have their list of orders and where they can manage their online shop. So once this online catalog has been uploaded into the merchant account, then this catalog is available through the Fortis Smart POS. The Fortis Smart POS is sent by Network International, who is our partner, and they own all the payment systems. So Network International sends this machine with Fortis already integrated into that machine. So continue working their daily life as usual, and then one day, a couple of days after signing the contract, a new machine will come in, and this machine will be connected to their Fortis merchant account and will have the Fortis software installed on the machine. And all it takes is one payment to test that the machine is working. And once this is done, then their entire system can be moved to Fortis. There's no halt in their operations. The maximum we would need would be an hour or two just to sit down with the merchant to try to collect their information, try to guide them and answer their questions. And then the training is provided as we go. And so this means that a business owner is able to start using Fortis in record time.
Fortis is a really smart system, but entrepreneurs often choose it for its simplicity. You don't need to deeply understand automation or interrupt your work, you know, for training or installations. You sign a contract, and as soon as the machine is delivered to you, everything is ready to work. Hamda's clients got a taste of simple solutions. Quick Fix was so popular that the sisters had to keep it as a permanent service, not just for the duration of COVID.
So we did those six projects. We learned in those six projects little things that could be adjusted in the operations to get it done even quicker, and fixed it in the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And then said, all right, if the demand is there, why am I shutting down this campaign? Let's turn it into a permanent one, because I noticed all the people who wanted quick changes but didn't want to go for the full interior design. This was the perfect service for them. So we used the same branding of the campaign and just crossed out the word summer and turned it into a Quick Fix, which is now, till today, our most popular service. People call us saying, I need a Quick Fix. They're actually using the terminology. And to me, that's an achievement on its own. It means the messaging went out right. People are aware of our service. All my emails, DMs, WhatsApp says, do you have a Quick Fix slot? I need a Quick Fix. Until today, we do easily 5 Quick Fixes a month. We've done over 200, I would say now it's 250 Quick Fixes since 2020 and still going.
Wow. Over 250 Quick Fixes in like 4 years. And it seems that competitors also felt the huge demand and wanted to make money on it, obviously. And Hamda had to protect her territory.
We came across accounts that were using the Quick Fix term and using our content, the videos I've recorded, images I've captured, using Quick Fix terms, and our followers were sending it through to my account. And that's when I realized, okay, wow, we need to do something to kind of claim the service officially and mark our territory, I would say. And that comes with marketing. So the first step I took is trademark the Quick Fix as a term to our company. So if you would do that service, of course you can, but it cannot be named Quick Fix in the UAE. That's been done legally, and we have the official trademark for it. It is a difficult process. It took at least 2 to 3 months. They need to search if there's anything in that term in the country, if it falls under the same category or industry. It's a long process. So the first step was getting the trademark. The second step was a full marketing campaign about the Quick Fix service, which we done last year. We had the logo done, sub-logo done for the Quick Fix. We had branding done for that. And we did an event. So we did a Quick Fix workshop. We had media come in. We had previous clients come in, some collaborations, and really went all out with the Quick Fix service. And it definitely came in positively. That experience that we came across led to something positive, where it gave us the push to pause and focus more on the service and, I would say, making it efficient.
I asked Hamda what else, besides simplicity and low budget, could be behind the success of the Quick Fix. I want to understand all the details, just in case, you know, I want to apply a similar technique in my business.
Unfortunately, in this industry, there's the reputation of delays. Every single person we spoke to, if they already started, say, I was supposed to have this ready by then, and we're 3 months in, we're 5 months in. And that was the most common complaint with this industry, that timelines were not realistic. And I think people, it takes them time to actually believe me that when I say this is when you'll get it, because they seem to still get surprised when we submit on the same exact date. And to me, that was one point that I wanted to tackle and get right, because I know it's not available in the market. What we do is they know which day there's going to be painters, which day furniture is coming in, which day I'm drilling in the wall. All of this is in a very detailed timetable before they agree, commit, or make any payments. So for them to get that reassurance on dates is, I would say, the biggest plus. And that's where people really, I would say, get frustrated, is when work begins on site, you cannot use the space, and then delays happen in between and they're unable to use the room. What we do is we do all the planning out of their house and only come in a very compressed time, pre-scheduled, to get it done back to back, sometimes overlapping. You might have furniture coming in, someone installing a curtain, and someone fixing something on the other wall. So we do try to compress it in order to finish so quick. Not because our workers are faster, it's purely because of planning. That's all you need. And forecasting realistic timelines. We forecast quotation approvals, we forecast samples approvals, and keep that in mind when we give that deadline. What we noticed in the industry, people would give the timeline of the actual work, but don't clarify to clients that there's a lot that happens in between to reach that. And that's what we manage to forecast when giving those timelines.
So it's purely because of planning. I decided to dig even deeper and find out how the whole process from client profiling to work planning is organized in Dress My Room. And it looks like the sisters optimized a lot of things and they cut corners in many places.
Because with the number of inquiries that we get, I have to filter through which clients would match our service, which budgets would match the scope of work before sending my design team on site. So that's one step I eliminated. Is no site visits before some sort of clarity on the scope, on budgets, on deliverables. So the first step is I ask them for a brief. I try to make it as simple as possible. So if we take an example, a bedroom, I would say just take a picture of the current bedroom and we'll schedule a call. Once I see the space, I know what to ask. I would see what's happening in the space and say, all right, are we changing it all? Is there something that you want to keep in the space? I ask for inspirational images, whether it's from our account, of Pinterest, just to see their expectation of what they want in the space as well. My first question is, what will you do in the space? Not what colors do you like, because that we can decide on later. It's how you're using the space. What do you do there? How many people sit there? Do you eat there? I ask those questions in the initial call. I try to understand their lifestyle, how they use the space, who is going to be there.
So their first step is to create a brief using photos and interviews. The second step is budgeting. You need to understand which service will solve the client's problems and accordingly what budget is needed.
If you're looking for something simple where we're just furnishing with ready furniture, we'll do it as a quick fix. But I'm still flexible enough that if it's just one unit in a space and the rest of it is a quick fix, I would still take it as a quick fix project and tell them we'll deal with that separately at different timelines, just to not completely say this is not applicable for your project. So that's the first step. It's identifying which service they're looking for. Once we get to that, I get a brief on their requirements, sit with the design team and come back to them with an approximate budget range to see if the budget even suits them. A lot of times this is where I lose the client and I didn't even visit. So to me, this being efficient to kind of filter the clients, because I would say this might cost you, I'm just throwing random numbers. I might say this is 50,000 dirhams. And she says, oh, I was just planning to spend 10,000. And I say, but I have a minimum budget anyway, so this is not going to work out. And then it just ends there. Rather than sending my team, going for an hour meeting, visiting the space, and then coming to find out that the budget doesn't match the service that they want.
Okay, what is the minimal budget?
So the minimal budget we work with is 35,000 dirhams, but that's inclusive of everything. And the reason we reached that budget is we took one bedroom as an example that had the bed base there and maybe one piece of furniture and said, complete it for me. And when we tried to look into wall treatments, curtains, one thing people underassess is bedding, mattresses, pillows, blankets, sheets on their own is a big budget. In addition to, they see the final result, but they don't realize why they like it. It's the lamps, it's the accessories, it's the wall art. To get a finished project, you need to complete the entire space to tie it in together. They say, but it's just a small bedroom. And I say, small or big, I need to get the tables, I need to get the lamps, I still need to do the bedding. I mean, most of the pieces, whether it's a big room or a small room, I still need to get the same pieces. So we came to a realization that anything below that versus our time and the effort and steps that I still need to go through all the steps, whether it's a small room or a full villa. I need a visit. I need a day to present. I need a day to go shopping. I need my workers on site. So whether they're doing a small room or a full villa, those slots are taken. So I had to find a minimum amount where it's not a loss for me to book a project and book my entire team to do a small job. And then I get an inquiry for a much bigger project that I can't take due to that. And that's where we reached our minimum budget.
And what is included in this budget?
In the industry, we hear of a lot. So they pay for something and then realize, oh, the installation was extra and the delivery was not included, and so on and so on and so on. What we do is even the delivery fees that a shop like IKEA might charge, we know of. So I know they charge 150 to deliver, and then I'm buying from another four different stores who might charge me another 100 to deliver. So when I do the quotation, I'm actually allocating a budget for those delivery fees. I'm allocating the budget for labor work to install those lights. All of it is accounted for before we give the budget. So what I tell them is I'll either finish the room within this budget or less, because there might be sale. And if there was sale, then it's your lucky day. I'm not going to spend all your money. And there are so many projects where clients at their final payment found out that we didn't spend all their money. And that's also something rare that you find. But we'd rather be in a comfortable budget, guaranteeing that we can complete the space and make them happy with less rather than going back and asking for more. Nobody would be happy to hear that. So this budget includes our service fee and all the furniture, installation fees, delivery fees, all inclusive, no additional costs.
The third step after budgeting is approval.
So once we send them that initial range, if they're happy to move to the next step, that's when we, I would say, go into the official process. We send them the contracts, official quotations, and that's when they receive their project timeline as well. Because at this point, I've already assess the project and know the scope. So I know if I'm going to be painting walls, I know if I need to redo the floors, and this way I can forecast the number of days I need to complete the project. So they just receive one email that has the contract, the quotation, starting date till end date with all the timeline. We have deadlines for approvals and a quick fix. We explain to them that once we present what we show you, you have 3 days maximum to finalize the design for one reason. I'm presenting furniture that is currently in stock that is within your budget. I need to buy fast. If you're going to take a week or two to think about it, when I go back, it's not going to be waiting for us in store. Items move quick. And I will not be able to meet my delivery dates that has been calculated. So the first thing I tell them is we present. If you have any comments, you either give it in the meeting or you have a day to discuss it with family and come back so we can revise it and give it back to you within 3 days. And if they're happy, they make a payment, book their project, and that's when our design team visits. So this way, my team is only visiting clients that are booked. But it took a lot to reach that, a lot of trial and error to be able to find the right mechanism to filter all those inquiries and book the right projects.
So within the framework of the quick fix, they guarantee the budget and the deadlines. To do this, they make a schedule where projects go back to back. The team doesn't spend even an extra hour in the apartment. And to do that, the client needs to approve the design in 3 days maximum. It takes quite a lot of trust to sign up for this, right? How do they manage to gain that much trust?
The way we furnish is still our touch, but we still bring the client's personality in every design. To not make it feel like a showroom, they need to feel it, that it's their home and it's like they did it, but they're just getting professionals to help them do it. We, for example, had a client, one of the rooms we were furnishing was a playroom. And she mentioned that her son is autistic. So our designer treated that room completely different. She has background with autism and she knows about that. So all the choices in colors, sensory, touch was made to make sure that that child is comfortable in the room. And the client realized that because she knows how to deal with it. And she noticed all the little touches that were done, like his quiet dark corner in the tent, some sensory toys for stress, little details that they added in that room. That's what impressed her, not the color of the ceiling or the pretty sofa. And that we take to heart with every project.
During the interview, I thought that maybe people use Quick Fix as a way to try out Dress My Room. And then they come back with new tasks at bigger budgets. So I ask about retention and loyalty.
I have clients I've been working with since 4 years. They're still coming back. And then I start working with their sisters and their in-laws and so on. So the way it works, most people like to try us out. So they would give us one space. Some do trust us blindly if maybe they came through word of mouth or know of us or heard of us, they are more confident. But a lot of people say it up straight, I will try you with this room. And if I'm happy, then we'll continue the rest of the house. And that's what's been happening. So there was a house where we started with their entrance and living room, and then did their family room and kitchen, and then slowly moved into every single bedroom. And then looking back now, we actually renovated the entire villa, but it was done on phases. We have clients where we met them when they were getting married, so they were moving into their new house and we furnished it for them. We then furnished the baby's room. So a year or two later, she'd come back and mention she's expecting a baby and we did her nursery. Now her son is about to turn one and she said it's time to do the playroom. And then the husband required his own man cave to escape everything that's happening.
When Hamda told me about the quick fix, I immediately started sharing this hack with my fellow entrepreneurs. So many of them face the problem where clients are intimidated by the scale and complexity of the project that they are offering. But suggesting a small, quick, low-cost project instead? That's brilliant. Especially when, after a successful test, those clients come back with bigger budgets and new tasks. So take this hack and run with it. But did you notice how often Hamda repeated, it took us many tries to figure out exactly how this should work? For example, profiling client through a photo. If they had visited every prospective client, their costs and timelines would have skyrocketed. Take into account Dubai's size, right, and the time they would spend, the quick fix obviously would have stopped being called quick. These kinds of details, they can only be understood through practice. So these entrepreneurs took things step by step.
I think myself and my sister are very safe. We're not risk takers. That I can tell you. Even when we started the project, we didn't have employees because we weren't confident that the demand will always be there. And we're not risk takers, clearly. We did everything for over 2 years. My car was filled with furniture. I carried the boxes myself. I was standing there on site with our subcontractors and workers. We didn't have a team for over 2 years doing all those quick fixes because we thought maybe this is just a phase. You know, everyone's excited. It's just for the next 2 months. What if we hire the team and the demand drops? We weren't confident because it happened. The spike was so high that we thought this might just be temporary. And we said, okay, let's see if the demand stays this way. We gave ourselves a deadline. All right, if for the next year, we look back and we were still fully booked 3-4 months in advance for a year consistently, we'll hire employees. We were 6 months booked in advance because we were a small team. So we had that reputation that you need to contact Trust My Room months ahead to get your slots. So people were eager to book their slot with us. And now when they come, someone contacted me today and said, do you have a quick fix slot? I said, yes, what is it for? She said, April 2025. I said, oh, you know, we can get it done next month. But she's probably one of the old followers that reached out years back and is aware because her contact was saved. So she's someone who spoke to us before. So she's probably from the 2020 era when we were pre-booking was required. Now we have a full operating team and we can accommodate the requests much quicker. But we're very safe that it took us more than a year to be confident to even hire one full-time employee initially. Now we have a full team. But we really took all our steps very safe, I would say, until we reached where we are.
You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. You're listening to Crossing the Desert, podcast by Fortis. Fortis helps seamlessly connect businesses and their customers and run the business. It assists in attracting and retaining customers, selling products and services, accepting payments both online and in-store, and managing finances and personnel. Join Fortis social media. Links are in the episode description. Follow our podcast or add it to your favorites. Give us 5 stars or a heart and leave us a comment. This will help other listeners find out about us and we'll love to read and answer them. And see you in the next episode. Production by Hatchup Podcast Studio. Showrunners and editors Alexandra Volkova and Yelena Volkova. Producer Daria Sanikova. Sound designer Marion Terence. History consultant Alena Podnebenna. Fortis consultant, J.P. Serhal, and I'm your host, Isaac Delonin.